Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and a man who is prejudiced against Dutch people. It's Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
That's me. I do...
More on that later, yeah?
Yeah, let's do that.
He's gone. He's dead. Announced at 9:30 on a Sunday night, somewhat bizarrely. A very brief announcement notice, particularly when compared to the similar announcement for Jose Mourinho. Stellini installed for the rest of the season. Bit of a shock, Bardi?
Was a shock because I went to bed early. I had a busy weekend looking after a goddaughter who's just kids, man. They move around a lot and they don't stop. So I was knackered by the time we sent her packing on with her family, not just by herself at the door. And I woke up to the news, which was sad because I'd been waiting for it. And, you know, I like to be in the midst of all of it. So it was sad to wake up and having missed everything. But it's not a surprise, is it? It's a surprise it took so long, and it's a surprise that it happened on a Sunday night. But yeah, it's done. It's over. The Conte reign is over.
Any initial thoughts on why Stellini has been given the stewardship for the rest of the season?
I mean, it's quite unbelievable that Tottenham will sack Conte Ball and then just in its place put BTEC Conte Ball. I don't understand that. If you're going to break away from this because of football, then you obviously do what Tottenham do and you swing the pendulum right across the other side and you do something different. You put Ryan Mason in, and as you would like, Windy, maybe that installs some freedom and releases these kind of boxed up creative talents that don't do anything. Maybe that would have released them. But to go for Stellini is just a weird one all round. It doesn't make any sense to me, but this is Tottenham. Embrace it.
It does feel weird. I saw Paul O'Keefe tweeted, I think it was earlier on today, on Monday, that Mason's partner, I'm not sure if they're married, is due to give birth in 3 weeks. And I wonder if that has something to do with it, because obviously that would be massively disruptive to him and would mean probably we'd be without a manager again for another 2 weeks at least if he takes some sort of paternity leave. And then there's been some reporting that Mason and Stellini have forged quite a close bond over the last few months and actually get on really well together and work well together. So maybe it's just a case of circumstance. Mason's about to become a father again. Stellini's well liked by the players. They seem to be more hacked off by Conte's Southampton press conference than by anything else. And so it's just kind of getting rid of him rather than getting rid of the whole system.
I was surprised by it, but I kind of like it. I kind of think, like, oftentimes you think about managers who have failed, getting rid of this manager because their ideas aren't working, their tactical concepts aren't right. They've been found out. They're a fraud. That's not the case with Conte, right? His ideals we know are very good. Last week, for example, I criticized doing the same thing over and over again and not adapting, and I stand by that. But as a general principle, his ideas of football still stand up, right? The problem is him. So I definitely thought that his staff would go with him, right? But I think that there's some sense to this. I think Conte's football without Conte might be not such a terrible thing, you know, for 10 games. 10 games.
Yeah.
Well, if we win 10 games, we sign Stellini to a 3-year contract and then we sack him when we win 9th in December. But aside from that vision, I think this is decent. I think this is all right to see things out. Things were better, even if only temporarily. Things were better while Conte was in Italy. I think the lack of the weight of him hanging on everyone perhaps can give us a nice little boost.
Mm. There was some suggestion that we might not get the new manager bounce because essentially we've got the same team in place. But I don't know, if Conte's bringing a mood down around the place, and maybe even, you know, we saw some reports that Mason had put in some of the tactical flexibility. For example, Eric Dier stepping up into midfield was apparently a Mason initiative. Barney's laughing.
I mean, we really are stretching, talking about let's play for the manager bounce and Ryan Mason, tactical genius.
Not tactical genius as such, but more that Conte had become so inflexible, so rigid in his thinking, he was unwilling to try anything, whereas maybe like the same ideas but with some flexibility might just get us through.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, I really like the TV show Interior Design Masters with Alan Carr, whose dad was an excellent football scout, apparently. So that's really good, but it was rubbish in season one with Fern Cotton. Maybe this is just that. Maybe we just need a better presenter of ideas and of situations. And perhaps Stellini is that person. Perhaps Stellini is our Alan Carr and he's going to take us on to like BBC One primetime slot.
For 10 games. And then we part ways and never hear from Christian Stellini ever again.
So yeah. Last night on the Extra Inch Discord, there was an emergency group call. And everyone, people were online.
Them lot.
So they,
let's get me started with them lot.
I decided I'd listen in to see what they were saying on Discord, having a chat. And someone brought up the question of like, how does Stellini's football differ from Conte's? And so, because I hate myself, I went and watched some of his Alessandria and Serie C in 17-18, and they played very much Conte-esque football, as you would expect, as we saw when Stellini was on the touchline. But a lot more formation tinkering in those particular circumstances. So if that's sort of the example of Conte but slightly less rigid, then maybe that's what that is. Obviously their results were terrible and they sacked him after 16 games, but try not to think about that bit too much.
I mean, no egomaniac like Conte is going to hire an assistant manager that has different opinions to him. It's always going to be someone who just goes, yeah boss, that's good.
Yes.
And perhaps Stellini was a little, he might be a little bit nicer in delivery, perhaps that's what our players need, but I'm not expecting us to all of a sudden change, because we can't, because we've got players who are broken and won't play for the rest of the season. We have no left backs. So it's going to be more 3-4-3, perhaps the occasional 3-5-2. And I just don't see anything different coming. Perhaps had we signed... I mean, are we going to talk about possible managers? I guess we are, aren't we?
So yeah, I'll save my
little bit on that.
Yes, we're definitely going to have a long discussion about possible managers. But let's talk briefly first about the next couple of games, because I do think it's... I suddenly feel more optimistic about top four now that Conte's gone. I'm not saying we're going to get top four, but I think we've got a chance. I think we've got a chance with Conte not being there. I think things have got so toxic, emphasised by the post-Southampton press conference, which was absolutely horrendous. I think we would have really struggled to get top four under Antonio Conte, but I don't think it's completely out of the question. We play Everton and then Brighton. They're tough games. Everton obviously, to some degree, rejuvenated under Sean Dyche, and you know they're going to be more difficult to beat, more difficult to play against. And then Brighton, who we play at home, are one of the best teams in the Premier League this season under De Zerbi, who's having an incredible start to his life in the Premier League. These are really difficult games, and Bardi's already referenced that we do have some significant injury problems at the moment, worsened today with the news that Emerson Royale is likely to miss the rest of the season, having picked up an injury on international duty. Shock. Another Spurs player injured on international duty. I had in mind that he would just switch over to left back and cover for Ben Davis, or left wing back, I should say, and cover for Ben Davis, who also got injured against Southampton and is likely to miss the rest of the season. But clearly, we can't do that anymore. Emerson Royale's gone too. So where does that leave us with fullbacks? Well, Paul O'Keefe tweeted that Sessegnon could be back in 10 days or so. That won't be quick enough for Everton and probably not for Brighton either. What do you think we do in the short term? Are we just going to play Perisic at left wing back and hope for the best?
Yes. Yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah.
It's miserable.
Dan Juma is a candidate for left wing back, I guess.
No, no.
He's played wing back before in his career in Belgium. And, you know, that guy is not around to declare him a non-Conte signing. So I don't know. But it'll be Perisic. It'll be Perisic.
Or is there a switch to a back four and we play long layers, some sort of tucked in left back?
Maybe. Like I said, at Alessandria, he did play a bunch of back four and mix it up and play some diamond midfield and stuff like that. So maybe.
I do think that's interesting. Like, if we do suddenly see some more tactical experimentation, flexibility, it kind of would be evidence of the fact that Conte is he's obsessive when it comes to his way or the highway. He has his approach, and by God, he sticks to it and he believes in it. He truly believes in what he's doing. If suddenly Stellini's in charge and we're playing a back four, when a lot of fans have been saying all season, please try back four, it would be really fascinating. I'm not sure if we have the players for it. Fit right now either way, but let's see. It does appear also, as per Alistair Gold's reporting, that Richarlison might be back sooner rather than later, so that's good news.
Yeah.
So with all this in mind, are we expecting major changes come the Everton game? What do we think?
No, I don't think major changes. I think if he is going to tinker, he'll ease into it.
I don't think we can. How can we change? We don't have the players available to move into any other formation unless he drops Son and play. Oh, I don't know. Because then you've got Kulusevski, goes free in midfield. Is he going to drop Kulusevski? I don't know. I don't think we'll see anything different from a 3-4-3 with Perisic at left wing back.
God, that would be so depressing. He could play Danjuma. I would really like to see, ideally, I'd really like to see a 4-2-3-1 with Danjuma in the team.
But with Longley at left back?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'd be up for that. I think Longley as a tucked in defensive left back, Dayan Romero at centre back, Pedro Porro right back, Skip and probably Højbjerg in midfield, and then Son, Danjuma, Kulusevski behind Kane, or even Danjuma up top and Kane in behind in the 10.
Yeah, I don't think so. Don't think that's going to happen.
No, I think you're probably right. In other news, it seems like Paratici has got a stay of execution. His trial has been postponed until sometime in May. I believe.
May 10th.
So I guess that means, at least temporarily, he is very much involved in the search for the next manager. How do you feel about that, Nathan?
I think it's stupid. I think that we should have got rid of him when news came to light initially, whenever that was, a few months ago. I think that his managerial selections in his first window were really poor. We'll come on to in a bit, but I think that the reporting of who he wants next is really bad as well. I do think that one way or another, he does have an eye for young talent. But other than that, he's been appalling in all other areas, and we need to get rid of him.
The problem is it means
that it's Daniel Levy who has to guess at who the next director of football should be. Or we ask Paratici to select his replacement, but does he do a good job of that? Is it in his interest to do a good job of that?
It's not, basically.
No,
is it?
No, you're right. So
if we were, I mean, yeah, I completely agree, by the way, that I think Paratici should be gone by now. I think he should have gone as soon as this corruption scandal came to light. Yep. I think they could have justified sacking him on the basis of bringing the club into disrepute.
Yeah, just an image thing, right? And then if later he's found to be completely innocent, you can issue an apology. And I think that that's enough, you know.
and pay him off, essentially.
Sorry we sacked you. And excellent news that you're innocent and didn't do anything. You just dragged into the Juventus bollocks. You know, Juventus do drag everybody into the mud with them.
They do, but also he was right at the top of the Juventus operation, right? The reporting is that he did the dragging.
Yeah, he's in the thick of this.
He's just taken the hit. He's taken the fall. They've sat around a meeting room with cigars and leather chairs, and they've gone, Paratici, he's at Tottenham, let's do him. And he's been fingered.
It's his little black book, supposedly.
Yeah, I don't know. Don't know if I believe that. But anyway, yeah. I mean, Paratici's done some good things. He's picked out some good players. I'm not sure if they're... I could have picked Kulusevski and Bentancur and Romero. I could have told you those guys were good. Destiny perhaps is one from a little bit left field, but we haven't seen him play yet. He's had some hits, he's had some misses. If he moves on, then it doesn't really matter. Levy's in charge of picking the director of football, but it's not such a huge
thing. I would love to know if Levy has thought even about who might succeed Paratici if he were to go, assuming he does go. Because I think the director of football is such a large role now in the way football clubs run. And obviously the remit changes from club to club and they will have different specialisms and interests. But ultimately they're there to bring everything together, to bring together the recruitment, the playing, and probably the academy in Spurs' case. And I'm not convinced that Paratici's done a good job. I think, as you say, he has made some really good signings. His managerial searches have been disastrous. And we've barely got any integration with the academy right now. So I'm not sure that can be deemed a success. Obviously, that goes hand in hand with the fact that they appointed Antonio Conte, who naturally wouldn't want to use the academy. Primarily, it's not really his bag. But, you know, Paratici has to carry the can for that, I think. And we'll have a chat about who he might have lined up as our next manager after this. For 2023, we're once again partnered with Athletic Greens, so over to Bardi.
I started taking AG1 because my health is important to me. I trust AG1 to use the best ingredients and hold themselves to a higher standard. I trust AG1 as it's my daily assistant. It's there to help me be better. Do you trust me, Windy?
I trust you, Bardi.
I know that, and I trust you. You'd never Stellini me. Never push me out the door and take the top spot. You're my AG1. You're part of my daily routine. You're my early morning and all day best friend. When it comes to supplements, I don't go for untrustworthy options. I trust the best. I trust AG1. They know what they're doing. Sprinkle, shake, and get it in you.
It's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself and supports better sleep quality and recovery. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/extrainch. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/extrainch to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
We've been busy boys on Patreon this past week. Bardi, you first up, you've done a lovely interview with Samuel Rook.
Yeah, Sam wrote about Spurs moving on from the Bill Nicholson era into the kind of early 1970s and them getting relegated, making bad decisions at a board level, missing out on transfers. And as I was reading it, it was just really amazing that Spurs, the word of football, nothing's new in football, and that things continue to happen. Things Tottenham continue to get things wrong, and they always have done. So it was nice to read about that and find out a little bit of our history. I've actually got the copy of the book that I read, which I'll give away to one lucky listener. All they need to do is tweet me one thing that's gone and then come back again in their life, and the most interesting one, I'll send you a copy. Well, I'll send you the book.
Nice. So what's your Twitter handle?
Bardi, at Bardi, T-E-I. Nearly said lovely. The old one. Yeah.
Lovely. So tweet Bardi and get your hands on Sam's book. Nathan has put together a manager video.
Yeah, I did a little teaser of things to come, probably. Being as we haven't announced our next permanent manager, it gives me some time to work with. Although I am about to move house, so that might be a little bit of a wait. We'll see if I've got time to get one out beforehand. We looked at, very briefly, De Zerbi, Arne Slot, Ange Postecoglou and Mauricio Pochettino. Just a couple of minutes on each of them, quick stylistic sample pros and cons of each. This this was me being like a proper video making person and heavily prepping and heavily editing on both ends, which, you know, spending a lot more time editing than I did in the actual recording process. And I had to, in order to, because I put it on Reddit because it's a useful place to host videos, and there's a 15 minute limit, and I had to cut out several things that pained me greatly to cut out because I felt like there were important points to make. So as a process, it was difficult, but I'm really happy. It's probably my sort of sharpest, highest production value video that I've done to date. So touched on those four options. That was, and that came out a day or 2 days before the Nagelsmann news.
Yes. Oh, so
sorry, mainly as a joke, mainly just lightheartedly, I needed to put a second con under Arne Slot, who's the finals manager, and I jokingly put is Dutch, and a few people enjoyed that, and a few people were like, wait, what? So mainly that's just a joke, but in the 70s, although he took some influence from some Englishmen, Reinis Michels, who got a shout out on Bardi's pod, is largely credited with the invention of toastful football, as we anglicize it. Primarily, that was a means of taking advantage of a tight man-marking system, but it means more over-encompassingly that everyone on the pitch is responsible for attacking and everyone on the pitch is responsible for defending, and so you get good technical play out from the back. And that's kind of where that really starts in football, technical, capable defenders. He was manager of Ajax, and their star player was Johan Cruyff. He was also manager of the Netherlands, and their star player was Johan Cruyff, right? So Cruyff would later take over the Ajax role because he went into coaching. So you've got this, the biggest team in Netherlands, the Netherlands national team, for two generations of coaching are playing this particular style, this total football. And so that becomes the Dutch style. Cruyff also had a playing stint at Barcelona, and he also moves to coach there too. So this style of football takes over the Netherlands, becomes their style of play, but also the Eredivisie. Was it called the Eredivisie at the time? The Dutch league sort of, it becomes a second-rate league, right? So Cruyff goes on to manage at Barcelona. He has a young Pep Guardiola as his defensive midfielder. And he puts together the dream team who are good. And Michels was also coached there before him. So you get this Netherlands style of play becomes the Barcelona style of play, right? But in Spain, you're in a more sort of mixed setting, right? Back in the Netherlands, back in the domestic league of the Netherlands, you've got Ajax, Feyenoord and PSV, and they're playing Netherlands football because they've got decent players, and the other teams are just sort of trying to survive around them, right? And there's just one style, and it dominates. In Spain, you've got, you know, Real Madrid, who bring in these incredibly talented footballers but aren't playing the exact same style of football. So you've got that style, that possession, short passing, triangles kind of football exposed to other ideas. And Guardiola eventually, you know, has Barcelona B. Barcelona themselves go through a bad period of time in between those two coaches until Ronaldinho comes in. And so Guardiola inherits a situation in which his team have been poor recently. He's bringing through the greatest academy production ever in Busquets, Iniesta, Messi. And he's up against a really, really strong Real Madrid side with this sort of idealized form. So he reaches a new level of football, I think it's fair to say, at that time, with the Netherlands style. Meanwhile, the story in the Netherlands is just that style again and again, stagnating, not growing, not getting resistance. Eventually, you get Van Gaal coming through, and he says, okay, yeah, we're going to take these ideas of possession football, of technical football, and what we're going to do is we're going to make it as pragmatic as possible, right? So, yes, we're going to press high sometimes. Yes, we're going to possess the ball, but one of the great benefits of possessing the ball is that you can defend by having possession, right? So you get possession football inched to efficiency in the dullest possible way. And that kind of becomes Dutch style, like later you get Frank de Boer and so on. And so and so you've got positional play that has gone through Mikel's, Cruyff, Guardiola, and become the dominant football of the top teams in the world now. And then you've got the strain, the original strain of that that's become the Dutch game. And so what I'm finally getting to with this is that whereas Ten Hag is a Dutchman, started off in the Netherlands, went abroad, was at Bayern Munich, developed his game with a sort of rest of the world sort of understanding, he's kind of the exception amongst Dutch coaches, whereas Slot, for me, is still in the Dutch school, but he is at the maximum from within. Does that make sense?
It did until those last few words. Okay. What do you mean by the maximum from within?
So he's more Van Gaal or more Cruyff?
Cruyff. I would say that, yeah, in a way, he's kind of a throwback, is that he's
but
reversed.
He can only play that within the Dutch league because all the other teams are slightly weaker and not able to play that system because they haven't got the quality of players.
Well, how it materializes on the pitch is that Slot's got really, as I say in the video, got really nice, fun, interesting ideas in build-up play, and then it gets to the final third and it's kind of just down to the two creative wingers to sort of make it up from there.
Right.
So it's lacking, again, some of those ideas that you saw go through Barcelona and through Guardiola and then move elsewhere, Manuel Leola and stuff like that. That there's principles, but they haven't developed in the same way that those ideas have elsewhere in the world.
Okay, really interesting. And on that basis, you think Slot is not worth the risk?
I still like him because, again, he is again, almost doing a throwback to 70s Netherlands, in that he's going, right, let's get players forward. Let's be really attacking with our ideas, but hasn't sort of quite finished them off and perfected them and worked out what to do at the end. And essentially going to the typical Dutch profile of having like a big number nine and also a number 10, a sort of a Dele, Van der Beek type profile, who's also about goals, rather than reprioritizing extra creative players in those kind of positions and roles and extra creative ways of thinking. It's about, let's get to the final third and then we'll just cross it in. We'll work it out from there. Right. So, but I still think that he's a good option. He's just not a great option. And that's why his con is that he's Dutch.
Nice. Okay. I get it. Okay. Very well explained. Very well explained. Nice tangents. You've kind of touched on it already, but the news broke that Nagelsmann was going to be available and then broke that Spurs would, of course, be interested were he to become available. And in the time that happened, we were sent a link to a really good article on Nagelsmann by Adam Kahn, who had written about him as a person, his personality as a coach, and sort of some of the issues at Bayern. Adam then got in touch with me and I managed to set up an interview with him. I spoke to him today about Nagelsmann. So Adam Kahn is a German football consultant and freelance journalist. I think we could say German football expert. He really knows his stuff and was absolutely fascinating. I'm not sure yet whether that video will be released on the main podcast feed or just for our Patreons. It will certainly be released to the X-Subs first. We may eventually release it on the main podcast feed as well. Let's see how things go with the Nagelsmann link. But really, really interesting. I already knew and liked Nagelsmann. I feel like I've warmed to him even more since speaking to Adam. DB96 asked us, how would our squad fit Nagelsmann's 3-1-4-2 formation? And on the basis of my conversation with Adam, I sort of want to reject the question because I don't think Nagelsmann plays one formation or would play one formation. I think he is flexible enough to play with the back four or back three. In fact, he's played in a whole variety of different shapes and systems. I don't necessarily think he would go with a back three at Spurs. But there are some questions to resolve around our fullback/wingbacks, which Adam touches on in our conversation and which would be really fascinating. But firstly, Nathan, do you think Julian Nagelsmann is realistic as a target for Tottenham Hotspur?
I do. I think think that there's been reporting of sort of his interest in Tottenham in the past. He enjoyed watching us under Pochettino and maybe was even a vague sort of childhood fan before that. That he wasn't expecting to be at a mega club like Bayern by the time he was 33, and was eyeing Tottenham as a sort of final stepping stone, if you don't find that too disrespectful as a sort of an idea. I think basically it seems like he has a choice between, well, taking some time off, which Bayern will owe him a bunch of money, or Spurs or Real Madrid, right? And you may think, well, how is that even close? Obviously, you'd pick Real Madrid over Spurs, but he's gone away. He's done the mega club thing. It's not worked out for him, which we can get into, or maybe that's treading on the toes of the other podcast. But basically, he kind of clashed with some of the more senior figures, right? Some of the bigger egos at Bayern Munich that he needed a buy-in to his sort of high risk approach to football, and they weren't interested in that. They weren't about that. I think when you're, you know, kind of a victim of his own succession, that he's younger than some of the senior players, right? I think when you're trying to get buy-in to your ideas, buy-in from Bayern, when you're trying to get players to really commit to your ideas, a lot of football clubs, including Spurs, if some of the players are kind of dubious, but then you win 5 games on the trot, everyone's happy. Whereas when you're at Bayern Munich and when you're at Real Madrid and you do that, that's just kind of what's expected of you, right? You don't continue to win people around. And so he continues to get this resistance from, you know, Neuer, from Müller, from whoever, from some of the pre-existing coaching staff. He ended up firing the goalkeeping coach controversially with Neuer. And so that stuff didn't work out for him. So maybe his perspective is he wants to jump straight back on the horse, say, no, I can do this at a mega club. I can do this with the biggest egos. I'm going to go to Real Madrid. I'm looking at their squad and I'm saying, it's time to move on Modric. It's time to move on Kroos. It's time to bring through some of the younger midfielders that they brought in. And he wants to go there and immediately take on that exact situation and get it right this time. Or maybe he says, hey, I'm 35. I've already done Bayern Munich, my childhood club. Maybe a little step down, maybe a fun adventure, maybe, you know, increasing my stock again, doing 2 or 3 years at Spurs is what's right for him. I wouldn't be surprised either way. So I think it's viable. And I think that if there are financial roadblocks in our way in terms of his wages, there was report of potentially needing to buy him out of his contract, but then more likely Bayern are going to want to get his wages off their book because they owe him for the rest of the contract at the moment. He's not been released from his contract. He's been relieved of his duties at the time. So I don't think that should be too much of a problem anyway. I think that we should try. I think that we should really try and go for him for sure.
Vardy, where's he in your list of preferred candidates?
I mean, like, he can get away with falling out with senior players, but then other managers can't. I don't know. I don't have an opinion on him. I think it'd be nice. I think it would be a managerial appointment that would get the fans on side because he's young, he's shiny, he's fresh. He's pretty much everything that Antonio Conte isn't on the surface anyway. So for that sake, I'd be very positive about it.
When you say he can get away with falling out with senior players, I mean, isn't that why he's just been sacked? Like, somewhat unfair, because Bayern are still in every competition and joint favourites for the Champions League. It does seem like they've been quite rash in sacking him at this stage.
I mean, it's not pulling up any red flags for you guys. You would normally be, oh, but he's fallen out with Neuer, he's fallen out.
Oh, I see what you mean.
He fell out with Lewandowski and that kind of stuff. So he's a guy that wants to get his own way, which, I mean, all football managers do. But the point is whether or not he wins games. Can he win games at Tottenham? Probably, and it'll be interesting at least. But I don't know. I don't think he's going to come. I think he's got bigger things on his mind.
Your response to the 3-1-4-2 question, I totally accept that he's played a variety of formations, but I think that sort of at the core, if there was a formation for him, like the 3-4-1-4-2 sort of encapsulates his ideas and his football. And I think that I did a tweet looking at how we might play in that shape and where the gaps are. I think that makes sense with the squads that we've got, maybe more than any other formation.
He's also frequently played this season, the back four with the sort of tucked in fullback on the left, the sort of what we saw with Mourinho, where Ben Davis played that role.
So yeah, the 4-4-2 he was playing for a while, that was him sort of trying it the player's way for a while. And I think that is therefore not necessarily something that he would be looking to do. I mean, he did play that formation with Leipzig with a different sort of idea in the approach. But yeah, I don't think that that's one of his preferred shapes, but maybe.
I think he also certainly back in the day would change the approach based on the opposition.
Well, this is something that apparently the Bayern players had such a big issue with, right? So he's changing the shape, which means he's changing the instructions. Yep. He's also often changing the personnel around, right? Even though you played well last week, you're going to be on the bench for this weekend. Senior players really not liking that at Bayern, whereas I think that that's good. So I think that you should adapt. I think that you should come up with new ideas and constantly change, and that also enables rotation, that you don't have to do a half hour sit down with every single player every time they move out. Maybe he made lapses in his communication there, and we've criticized Conte for similar, right? So maybe he needs to improve his communication when making those changes. There was a comment from, was it Kramaric back at Hoffenheim, saying, you know, he changes stuff around mid-game too much without asking us and stuff. But that was basically the only complaint on that kind of thing prior to his time at Munich. So I think that that's a positive. I think that that would suit a club like us, you know, Hoffenheim, Leipzig, clubs in our kind of stature.
You essentially need to put together a group of players who are as flexible as the coach, because if you've got players who prefer to play in one set way, you're going to struggle to... I mean, it's a bit like Conte not having players that wanted to do things his way. Like Spence, for example, it is rumoured that he wouldn't adapt to Conte's methods. There's no point forcing in the eyes of the manager, a square peg into a round hole or whatever. You need to have a set of players that match up with the manager's expectations. And there's no doubt that Spurs would require some investment in ball-playing defenders if Nagelsmann were to come in, because it is heavily reliant on players being able to play out from the back. And as we've seen this season, that is continually, and has been over many seasons now, continually an issue. We have to improve our ball-playing from the back. We essentially only have Romero that's any good at playing out from the back. And that has changed.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe you look to replace one of the centre backs, and you're trying to make do with either Dier or Davies for, you know, up until a January or something. I think, you know, when we're talking about playing out the back, you've got to include the number six, and Højbjerg isn't up to that level. Bentancur, I don't like in those areas. Maybe Basuma can play that role.
Well, okay, little spoiler alert for the podcast with Adam. He wondered if Basuma might play the sort of more box-to-box role. And I wonder if that would then free up Bentancur to play the dedicated six role, because he's much better at taking the ball in tricky situations under pressure, and would perhaps be a match for Sabitzer in that role, whereas Basuma would play the Goretzka role.
Okay.
It was something it's worth thinking about, I think. But obviously, he needs to have a look at the squad first and assess what their skill level is before deciding.
I mean, he could just listen, download the podcast and just listen to us, and we'd tell him exactly what.
Yeah. Yeah.
He just needs two ball playing centre backs and a midfielder that could pass progressively or beat the press by using dribbling skills. That's it.
Yeah.
That's all we need, man.
Well, Eric Dier would be a nightmare under Nagelsmann, because they press too high as a defence. It just wouldn't. There'd be too much space in behind for Dier to be manageable in that system, I think.
If Nagelsmann plays, if whatever manager we get, if they play Dier and Højbjerg immediately, and they're their go-to guys, I'm out. I'm that manager out immediately.
What if it's Poch?
I'm out. I can't go and watch life repeat itself again with another manager trying to make things work with Dier and Højbjerg. Either. either we sell them and we move on. Just sell them and move on. You know, I'm going to get people upset again about the Højbjerg rant. So it's not so much Højbjerg. It's so much the kind of idea that you can make these people work. I don't believe anybody can.
I certainly think Dyer in a high defensive line is a recipe for disaster. And I'd say Davis probably is as well, to be honest.
I would keep Ben Davies as a decent squad alternative. Left back, left side centre back, he's all right. Even left wing back, he's fine. Ben Davies is fine. He should never have been our starting left sided centre back this year, but he's a nice squad player who's really unoffensive.
Fair enough. And I think that if we have someone other than Nagelsmann and we have we're playing like a 4-3-1, I think that Højbjerg is fine alongside a much more creative, progressive midfielder next to him. In a two-man midfield.
I've got a question for you two. So throughout these kind of last few weeks of Conte's time, Poch has been spotted popping out, playing golf with Spurs players in restaurants, local restaurants and everything else like that. And we've sacked Conte and not appointed Pochettino. Do you think Pochettino's just been playing the game of winding up the fans, winding up the board, like, oh, I'm here through all the dark times? Because he wasn't playing golf when we were winning matches. We start losing matches and all of a sudden he's playing golf with Mickey Hazard. Do you think he's been pulling our legs and having us on?
I don't see what benefits him in that. I think that he did that stuff, right? He did the walking his dog around Enfield for some reason, right? And then nothing happened. And then a couple of weeks later, there was every major outlet at the same time was briefed that Pochettino would be open to taking the job, right? I think he was doing that because he was showing Tottenham he's interested in taking the job. And then when the subtle thing didn't work, he just, you know, his agent or whatever, his agent, his brother or something, released a press release essentially through the various outlets. So I think he wants the job. And I think the fact that we haven't appointed him now or announced that we're going to let him take over in the summer or whatever suggests that we are leaning away from doing that for whatever reason, which I suspect is to do with the director of football role.
Yeah, I was about to say, it does appear that Paratici is not that keen on Pochettino being unappointed, which leads me on to some other candidates. Nathan, you're not impressed by the reported list that Paratici's got in mind.
Yeah, so the reporting was that the reporting is that we were vaguely close to appointing Tuchel. And as a result, he was maybe considering coming to us, also possibly waiting for the job with Bayern, told Bayern that was the situation and they sacked Nagelsmann, apparently. That's the impression that we're getting, right? So, you know, huge Tottenham get things done again. And now Tuchel is at Bayern. So he is another ex-Chelsea coach. He is another hyper-authoritative, abrasive figure. He plays very good football. Not so much at Chelsea, but that's beside the point. That's just a Chelsea thing. He plays very good football, very, very modern possession attacking football. But as a figure and as an ex-Chelsea coach, I think he was a poor fit for us. Also on his list, Luis Enrique, again, possession football, right? Much more to the extreme possession football, tiki-taka, almost. But a guy whose history at a number of clubs is one or two seasons, history of larger spending. Go and talk to Roma fans, go and talk to Celta fans, a big name, you know, a serial winner. Again, I accept the football is closer to what we're talking about as being right for us, but the personality, the name, the signing screams of doing something to make Harry Kane stay at the club, and that isn't how I think that we should be operating. And then, a buddy was asking before, the Porto manager, I don't know how to say his surname.
Conceição.
Again, football's okay, football's decent. He sort of started out as more of a pressing coach, was getting by on that pretty well, has more recently been doing a better job of developing his possession game, bringing through more technical players, But as a guy, apparently he is a real fucking dickhead. Just an awful, awful person. He's been sent off like 20 plus times. He spat at opposition players, you know. And I understand that sometimes with characters like this, they're your dickhead, right? Romero, we love him because of that stuff. But I feel like that's not the situation with this guy. This is a guy who, you know, Porto and Porto fans, they put up with him because he's delivering success. But he, again, is a super abrasive figure and not what's right for Spurs right now. I don't want to overstate that, like, we need coddling, like we're a bunch of babies and giving away to sort of some of the stuff that Conte's suggesting, because I don't believe in that. But I'm saying, let's bring in sort of an optimistic figure, you know?
A unifying
presence, 100%, man. So, you know, that is a list of coaches who are all playing somewhat different football, all have significant downsides for different reasons. And, you know, if that's his list, he's got to go. That's not an acceptable list of coaches. And again, goes back to, in the summer, Gattuso and Nuno. I think what the fuck is this guy doing?
Yeah, yeah. Like, this is his one job right now.
Yeah.
It is concerning. I've got no faith in Daniel Levy choosing a manager, but equally I have no faith in Paratici choosing a manager. One thing I would say is Nagelsmann is an open goal for Levy. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got a manager coming away from one of the biggest clubs in the world who, until he joined them, was seen as the next big thing. He is young enough that he's malleable, adaptable, can work within different systems. He plays good football. I think there's enough there for Levy to get hold of and just go with it. And so I don't think we necessarily need Paratici to be there doing whatever he's doing. I think Levy, for now, could just appoint Nagelsmann, if he can get him, and then sort out director of football later. I think that's a possibility. I don't think it necessarily has to be director of football first.
My only concern with that is like a power vacuum in which you get in Nagelsmann, and then when you later try to appoint a director of football, Nagelsmann puts up like resistance to that. I think even for my top tier coaches who are Nagelsmann and De Zerbi, for me, there still has to be the condition of that they accept working under a director of football who we don't currently have. That for me, like, that just, that is the top priority, is using a director of football top down system, and then those are my top two guys.
Mm. Buddy, who are your sort of preferred candidates right now? I mean, we've thrown out a lot of names in this podcast. Is there anyone that stands out to you that you'd really like us to take a chance on?
I mean, I liked De Zerbi back in the day before the Brighton period. I thought he would have been a good option. I also listed Gasperini. In true classic Bardi, they were my two options, my two go-to. I still would like De Zerbi. Part of me is a bit concerned about him. We're in this point now. I think we've moved on from serial winner, but I still think De Zerbi doesn't quite have the kind of back catalogue to get him over the line. I'm not sure that's what the people want. Nagelsmann would fit everything. He's won things, and he's enough of a project manager to get through that.
Mm.
So I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm tired of putting so much hope and faith into managers for it not to work out. I'm just going to trust the process and see what Paratici does.
I mean, one thing to say is that this feels like there are a lot more potential candidates this time around than last time around. I mean, it felt, before Conte became an option, it really felt like we were scrabbling around. I mean, the Nuno appointment was horrendous, wasn't it? Whereas now you have some really exciting options, you know, Pochettino available, Nagelsmann available, De Zerbi gettable. These are good options for us, for a club of our size and where we want to be. And that feels really, it fills me with optimism, actually, about what's to come. I would be very happy with any of those options. You know, Pochettino feels very much like the sentimental choice, but I'm not against that. Nagelsmann feels like a very logical, well-fitting choice, and De Zerbi's like a slightly exciting wildcard option that I'm all for as well.
I mean, I think, Stu, like, back in 21, Nathan did the a list, didn't you, Nathan, about the managers that we could be listed with. And it was Nagelsmann, Rose, Hasenhüttl, Potter, Favre, Ten Hag, Schmidt, Gallardo, Jesse Marsh and Scott Parker. So things, they've moved on, but it's also still the same kind of names there. We're only 2 years further down the line. Gallardo's still there and Hasenhüttl's obviously gone. What's Marco Rose up to?
He was sacked not that long ago.
Oh, he's available then. Get him in.
Speaking of Gallardo, Nathan, Pompower said two managers that have been linked to us now and previously that seem to excite some people are Amorim and Gallardo. And I noticed Nathan noted both as being too out of possession focused for what we might be looking for at Spurs. I was wondering if Nathan could potentially talk about the specifics of what that means, e.g. are they full terrorist ball or just a vibes-based attack, as they seem to be presented in a different way when talked about in the press.
Sorry, Rose was appointed at Leipzig in September. okay. Amorim and Gallardo. So, both of these guys have teams who dominate the ball, right? Both of these guys, if you look it up statistically, have a high percentage of possession, right? So they're not Jose Mourinho, right? But they both have really good defensive structures. They're both really good at winning the ball so that they have possession, yeah? For a variety of means, not just high pressing, although it leans more that way. And then it's more leaning more towards sort of individuals working it out from there. I think over the last season. So, I mean, did Amorim win the league last year? Is that right? Oh, boy.
For Sporting.
Okay, sorry. So it's 2 years ago Sporting won and they haven't returned to that glory since, right? But it seems like he's implementing more of a possession model. He's trying to bring in more of a possession model, and there are some teething issues with that. And obviously they've also had quite a few sales in their time, including Porro to us. And he looks like he really wants to be there for the long run with Sporting. He's essentially director of football at Sporting. Really has like thorough control over the club and kind of recognizing that he is a talent in development himself as a younger manager. And so he kind of seems to want to stick around at Sporting for a few more years, at which point, you know, maybe he's super hot property, right? He may well be like top of my list in a couple of years' time, top of anyone's list in a couple of years' time. But he is both building himself as a coach and also building Sporting as a legacy. So he's one definitely to keep an eye on. Whereas Gallardo is more of a mystery, right? Again, similar kind of situation in which his team are really, really, really good at counter-pressing or winning the ball back. And then they kind of just have the best players after that. Yeah, once they've got the ball, they're just better athletically, technically, creatively on an individual level. And it's much less about any kind of possession structure, which is not to undermine the job that he's done, because that's what's right for the football he's playing in that country, right? The pitches that he's playing on, the level of opposition that he's playing on. But I think that he's really overhyped, and that he should go to a lesser club than us, quite frankly, in Europe, and prove himself there. And he's someone to keep an eye on when he does so. But I don't think he's ready for a step up as big as us. I hope I don't come across as disrespectful to South American football, because talent production there is incredible, and I'm not dismissing it as a product, but I think that's the reality of the level of league play. And well, cup play is more relevant, but that's beside the point.
I don't think you've been harsh at all. I think that's totally fair. To jump from River to a Premier League team, a top end Premier League team, it's quite a jump. He does need to go to a smaller club somewhere else, perhaps on the continent first.
I mean, he was also at River for a hell of a long time as well. You can get a little institutionalised when you stick around for as long as that. And he's doing the right thing, I think, in taking a bit of a career break at the moment, because that would have been very intense, you know, especially in that league. But yeah, I think it does sound like he needs to... We need to see him elsewhere first, whereas there are a bunch of guys who are proven elsewhere who would make very good candidates. Yeah, I mean, I do think it's quite exciting, but we've got now, what, probably 3 months of speculation coming up. Enjoy that, guys.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Barney, and our tactics guy, Nathan Aklar. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/TheExtraInch. Production is by Nathan A. Clark. Our logo, artwork and website are designed by Creighton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram at David Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. And most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the ex-subs, we love every single last one of you. And of course, come on you Spurs.